Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Total, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Guys, welcome to the show. We're back with another one. What's going on, Lash? How you feeling?
What's going on, man? We got a lot to get to. We're going over the week that was for the week of April 21st through the 27th. It's been an interesting week. A lot to get to.
Yeah, it's a lot to get to. The Mets, they went out West Coast and they came back 500. We were on a streak, doing really well after that. And then things fell apart for us. And now we're looking like what Met fans are kind of used to. So we go out there, we're playing the Dodgers, and we know that's where teams go to die. They have that amazing all-star team, Freeman, Ohtani, Mookie Betts, Will Smith. You know, they're really good, and they perform really well. We went out there, we took two, won the series, and we were able to win our fifth series after that one, and we were on a super streak, six games in a row, and then the wheels started to fall off. We lost the last game of the series, 10-0. Ohtani showed up, and he pretty much destroyed us. And then we went into San Francisco, and after losing that last game in L.A., we lost the first two of the series, losing that series, destroying our streak, and winning the last game in the series due to Blake Snell getting scratched due to an abductor strain. And it's showing once again that these pitchers are going down at a dramatic rate. He hasn't had a great start to the season, being that he was a Scott Boras client and he was a late sign for San Francisco. We really didn't know where he was going to go. I believe the Yankees were talking to him. There were a couple of ball clubs that were interested in the lefty National League Cy Young winner. But look, he's down already. 15 days, and we'll see what happens. It's pretty interesting how these pitchers keep going down all over the league, and nobody has answers. The Mets lost that series in San Francisco. Then they came home to play against the St. Louis Cardinals, and the next series is going to be against the Cubs. But we didn't do so well in that St. Louis series either. We ended up losing that series as well. So now we lost two series in a row. We were able to stop the bleeding today, and we went to extras. We had a great outing from Quintana. He went 8 innings, and they weren't really able to get to him. He pitched 8 innings, gave up 3 hits, 1 earned run, and that 1 earned run was pretty much St. Louis playing fundamentals. They squeezed a nice little bump down the third baseline, and the man out there was able to score. At that point in the game, I was like, this game is pretty close, and it might be over. It might be a 1-0 game. But the Mets were able to prevail, come back. Lindor hit a home run and tied up the ball game. We went into extras. We were able to stop them in the top of the ninth with the ghost run on second. And we were able to come back from that. Even though they were able to score in the top of the 11th, we still came back. And we were able to tie up the ball game. And with Vientos coming back into the picture after being called up a couple of days ago, he was able to get the walk-off. And it was important. It was an important win for us because getting swept like that by the St. Louis Cardinals, who are doing well, believe it or not, even though they're at the bottom of the barrel in the division, that division is pretty tough. Everybody has similar records, and I think that anyone in that division can win it. It's that simple. They're the National League's version of the American League East. Everybody's pretty close, and we won't really know what's going to happen until probably the last week of the season. And we lost Francisco Alvarez this week as well due to a thumb strain. He ended up getting surgery, and I think that hurt the ball club. We ended up calling up Thomas Nido, and, you know, he has his problems. I don't think he's a great defensive catcher, and he's streaky. But let's give him a chance, and let's see if we can figure it out while we wait for Alvarez to come back. I believe it's going to be like 8 weeks before he's able to even start practicing again. So it hurts. It hurts. It hurts to see the team trying to figure it out and then losing players that are going to get you to that next level and keep you in the competition. It's a big loss for us. What do you think about what I just said, Lasha? You think about, you know, these injuries to these pitchers and this catcher, you know, coming up and doing so well. Last year, half a season, 25 home runs. In my eyes, I said, damn, this guy's going to hit 50 this year. He's electric. He's a great defensive catcher. And he's going to be missed.
Yeah, definitely. I always try to look at the positives first. First of all, you got to look at the road trip. You guys went 3-3 on the road trip, so that's a positive. You took 2 out of 3 from the Dodgers, which is good. The favorite to win the NL pennant this year. I was kind of surprised to see that you guys lost 2 out of 3 San Fran, but you know that happens. It's, you know, it's part of baseball. But the disappointing news is obviously the loss of Alvarez. You know, I always say that your pitchers go as far as your catcher goes, and having a great catcher is like having a quarterback. He directs how the pitchers go, and he's able to catch all these different pitchers and has control of the game. And when you lose an important defensive catcher like Alvarez, I think it's going to hurt them more on the defensive side than it is on the offensive side. I know he hasn't kind of got hot with the bat yet, but I'm sure he will when he comes back. But thanks be to God, it's not a major injury. I believe it's a UCL, so it shouldn't be out for too long. It's a couple of weeks.
About 8 weeks, yeah. It's not a season ending.
Yeah, Tomas Nido, this is why you have Tomas Nido's, because he's a good backup player and someone that I feel comfortable with him playing behind the plate. You know, it'll be interesting to see how he catches the other pitch.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Here's a lot of the pitches that he's catching. He's never seen them before, I don't think. I don't think he played a lot last year because Alvarez, for the most part, was pretty healthy. So this is interesting to see how Nito does. But I got faith in the world of him. I've always liked Nito. He's a good backup catcher. And I think they'll be fine. The other news you just brought up earlier was the loss of Blake Snell. It's not surprising. He has said, I said an article, he was saying that Blake Snell's opinion, one of the causes of pitchers getting hurt is because there's no more sticky stuff. Obviously, as you know, sticky stuff is a substance that the ball players use so they can have good grip on the ball. Now, I don't fully buy that story as far as why that's one of the causes, because the purpose of sticky stuff is so you have grip, so the ball doesn't just go fly all over the place. Now, the reason why pitchers are getting hurt nowadays is because they're trying to throw gas at 100 miles per hour, and your arm can't take that much torque like that all the time. All sticky stuff is going to do is just so the ball doesn't slip out of your hands. That's all it's going to do. It's not going to control velocity. Now, I do believe this, that because you don't have control of the ball, they're thinking as well, since I don't have control of the ball because I don't have sticky stuff, now I have to throw harder, because the harder you throw, the harder it's going to be for that pitcher, it's going to be harder for the hitter to hit that ball. Because when you have control, you don't have to throw as much gas, because now you can kind of maneuver the ball where you want it. You can put it in the right corner, top right, top left, you name it. You can make the ball dance where it wants to. And that's why players in the 90s and the early 2000s, that's why these pitchers were able to go such long innings, because, you know, they weren't velocity pitchers. You know, when I think of velocity pitcher, the person that comes to mind in my youth was Randy Johnson. He's the only pitcher I knew that could throw gas. You know, now everyone can throw gas. You know, you name it, they can throw it. 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds, college kids or high school kids are already throwing gas now because that's what they preach. Throw, 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 throw. But the problem with that is you're putting a lot of force and a lot of torque on that elbow. People don't realize that. So I don't buy the whole story of the sticky stuff. But I think the other reason why Snell got hurt, because he signed late in camp. And, you know, yeah, you work out by yourself and you throw bullpen sessions on your own. But that's not the same as in-game competitions. Yeah, in spring training games, you're not playing the top-tier hitters on the other teams, but you are facing live batters that are not your team. Yeah, so they're doing their power. The teams against you are doing their best to hit against you because they know Blake Snell's a really good pitcher. He's got filthy stuff. They want to try to get to you. And he knows that the hitters that he's going to face are good. And you got players who are hungry, who are trying to make the roster. And they're going to try their best to want to get to him and hit him. So I think the correlation of him coming in late to camp due to the late contract he got with the Giants, and along with throwing so hard. Yes, sticky stuff does play a role, but it's not the main reason why he was hurt. With that being said, one guy that's really impressed me so far, maybe you can elaborate more on your team, has been the former Oriole outfielder, DJ Stewart. Man, he's been a shining star for the Mets lately, and he's an underrated player. And I know at the beginning of the season, we didn't say, yeah, DJ Stewart, he's going to be great for us. No one thought of that. And it's really, as a former Orioles fan, I'm glad to see him do well. He quite didn't catch on with Baltimore. He was all right, but he was more like a bench player, backup guy. But he's taking advantage of the opportunity to start, and he's doing well. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, DJ, I remember when he first came up last year with us towards the end of the season, and I saw everyone that with players like that, if they would have been brought up a little earlier during the season last year, I think we would have had a shot at the postseason. We played really well in the second half, but a little too late. And he was electric as well, you know, really strong bat. He's able to overpower the ball and put it over the fence. And I saw a star unfolding right in front of my eyes, and I said to myself, you know what? This guy can definitely, you know, produce and give us a nice round number, like 30 a year, you know, without even trying, because he hits the ball so hard. And he's pretty short, so it changes the strike zone for pitchers, and I like him a lot. But then we ended up signing J.D. Martinez, and Stewart didn't even know if he was going to have a job at the end of spring training. Even though J.D. ended up being signed late as well because of Scott Boras, you know. It's funny how we're putting these players together, right? Stewart had a job, and then you have J.D. out there waiting to find one. And Snell didn't, you know. Once again, another problem, another Scott Boras problem. But Stewart is definitely, you know, somebody that can become a household name in Queens and, you know, those little fans in the Bronx like myself that love the Mets and appreciate those low-key guys that can come in and contribute to the club. And I want to see him stick around. You know, he can play the outfield. He can be a really good DH and give Martinez a break from time to time. And I think we need him to succeed. So I think we have a lot of power. We just have to figure out how we're going to set up the lineup, you know, because I want to see both of those guys in the lineup. You know, if you have Stewart and you have Martinez and Alonso on a good day, that's serious power. And if you know how to place them in the lineup, you can cause problems for the opposing team. That's what I'm thinking. You know, we just got J.D. Martinez. He just came up on Friday, I believe, and he went 2-for-4 with an RBI double. And he came up and he started producing right away. I like it. But that's what this guy is. This guy is a workhorse. When he got signed, he said, you know what, I'm not ready to go upstairs yet. Give me some time. Let me figure it out. And he ended up getting, I'm not going to say hurt, but he had back problems while he was training to get back upstairs after the late signing. So it took him a little longer than usual, but he came in and started producing right away. Got a very good asset for this team. But I want to see Stewart and I want to see Martinez in the same lineup on, I want to say, a daily basis. I think that Stewart is that type of guy that should be playing every day, to be honest with you. But then, you know, we have an influx of outfielders right now. You know, Nemo, you have Stewart, you have Marte, you have Tyrone Taylor. And Tyrone is great, too. I think he's another pivotal piece to the puzzle. So we have those type of problems. That's better than not having the talent, you know? It's a better way of looking at things, you know, having too much. But these guys end up suffering. They end up resenting their team, and they want to play every day. So it's real easy for a player like that to say, you know what, I'm coming up, I'm feeling good, I want to see those at-bats. And it's almost like they'll easily say, yeah, I'll move to another team if that team guarantees that I'm going to be seeing at-bats on a daily basis. And how about your secondary team, the Atlanta Braves? You guys ended up getting Ozzie Albies back as if you needed him. You guys are...
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Total, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Great already. And then, you know, you lose a player, you guys are resilient. You guys didn't have a corner for a while last year, right? And you guys still were able to perform, make the postseason, and make noise. And a player like Ozzie Albies, I think, is pivotal as well for a good run this season. Even though you guys are the best right now, Atlanta's the best in record, and just the way they move, they have a really good core. Even after losing Freeman, you know, Olsen was able to come in and take his place, and nobody's looking back. You guys have a really good ball club.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's exciting. I'm glad to see Albies is back. Acuna is back. Like you said, they don't seem to skip a beat with the loss of Freeman in free agency. Matt Olson has been a really surprise. Really surprising to see how well I thought he wouldn't be able to match Freeman's. Freeman was great for his offense, but his defense is what made him a stellar first baseman. His defense is amazing. But I'm glad we got Matt Olson. He's doing great. Yeah, so this week they have played Miami and Cleveland. They swept Miami and lost 2 out of 3, I believe, to Cleveland. No, I believe they lost 2 out of 3 to Cleveland. I'm not sure. I know they won today. But anyway, they do well against Miami. Miami's game was interesting because on Wednesday they were up 3-1 going into the ninth. And I was at the game, and the closer, he came in and blew the save, and it tied the game and went to extra innings. And it was a situation where the Marlins had bases loaded, nobody out, and by hook or by crook, they managed to get out of it. Minter came in and shut the door, and the Marlins were not able to score. And then Atlanta came to bat in the bottom of the 10th. Acuna was the runner on base, and Harris got a bloop single, and they won the game. So it was a very impressive game. I wasn't expecting us to have to come back against Miami, but, you know, it happens. Closes blow games at times, but it was an exciting game to go to. I had a good time. It was fun. The crowd is always electrifying over there. You know how that is. Those fans are really – I think they're one of the best fans. I'm not, and not because they're good now, but they're truly loyal. And, you know, two things they love here in Atlanta are the Bulldogs and the Braves. And they're an exciting team. This past weekend, they just played the Cleveland Indians, who have the best record in the majors. So it's the two best teams in the majors. And it's an exciting series. But, yeah, it's good to have Albies back. I think he brings more help that they need. Your boy on Wednesday, Luis Guillorme actually played second that day for Albies, and he had a good outing. He did pretty well defensively. He didn't do anything offensively, but Guillorme, you're not looking for him for his bat. You're looking for him for more so of his defensive play. He's not a bad second. He was good with the Mets when he was at third base. He was there until Beatty got up. So he's been good. He's a good signing. I like him.
Yeah, he played all over the place. You know, this is why having a guy like that in the clubhouse is really important, you know, because he's able to pick up the pieces. I was surprised when the Mets let him go. It didn't make any sense to me. This guy is a homegrown, you know, played his whole career with the Mets, and I definitely miss him. And then seeing him in that Atlanta uniform, it almost bothers me. I read an article the other day about how he was really surprised and hurt by the fact that the Mets didn't pick him up this season. But the Mets are moving forward. You know, they're trying to, you know, go on into the younger side of things, and it's working for them. But to see a guy like Guillorme leave and end up with the Braves, you know, it really bothers me. Now, if he would have ended up with somebody else, you know, not in the division, okay, you know, that works a little better for me. But seeing these guys excel on other teams within the division, that really, really hurts. But what can you do? Baseball is all about, you know, moving forward and trying to stay young. Because you remember, the Mets were one of the oldest teams in the major leagues a couple of years ago. And now it's the complete opposite. So I see that being that they're moving in that direction, they kind of had to let him go, and they weren't, you know, willing to pay. Understandable, I guess. There's a lot of young guys out there that are coming up and making names for themselves, you know. I just was watching the Yankee game the other day, and this guy, Mason Miller, you know, he's becoming something important, you know. It's crazy because all these teams that have losing records end up getting, you know, first picks, and as these players start coming up, those teams that, you know, couldn't make it happen a couple of years ago are changing the league. And these teams that never had a shot at the postseason for years are starting to make moves, and it's changing the dynamic of the league and who's in charge now, you know? Because for years, you know, I remember as a kid, Atlanta won the division like, what, 15 years in a row or something like that. It was something that you already knew was going to happen because they were so good. They had a really good core. But this Mason Miller guy, right, he goes into Yankee Stadium of all places, and he's able to get the save. And he mows down Volpe, Soto, and Judge to end it, all on fastballs, clocking in at like 102, 103 miles an hour. He's 25 years old, but, you know, how long can he survive, you know, shooting at 102, 103 miles per hour? So another perfect example of what's happening around the league. You have to be careful. You have to be careful.
No, definitely you have to be careful. Mason Miller is pretty impressive because when he got drafted, they wanted him to be a starter in their rotation, but it just wasn't working out. Instead of just sending him or DFing him and releasing him, they said, you know what, let's give him a shot in the bullpen and see how he does. And he's been lights out, and I would not be surprised if he's an all-star candidate or representative for the Oakland Athletics in the Midsummer Classic in July. He kind of reminds me of several years ago, Baltimore. They had a young pitcher at the time. His name is Zach Britton. He came up as a starter. He was awful. He just had no command, no control. His issue was that he just couldn't go the distance. And instead of letting book Showalter was the manager of time, he said, well, let's put you in a relief situation. And he turned out to be one of the best closers that Baltimore had. And because of that, he became trade bait. And they traded Zach Britton to the Yankees. So, as you know, going back to Oakland, you know, Oakland's probably not going to be a playoff contender. Right now, they're looking good. Season's early, so I'm not going to be like, oh, my goodness. They're going to, you know, they're still under 500. But with that being said, if he does well, it depends. He might be trade piece. Maybe you could trade him to get more top-tier, you know, second-tier, you know, who knows, top-tier prospect. You might get a level one prospect out of him if he continues to do well. So I think that's what Oakland's hoping for. I like to see surprising stars, people you never heard of, come up and just, you know, be lights out in the majors, because it's very hard to do, you know. And good for him. Yeah. I'm glad to see he's doing well. And it's pretty impressive because Oakland took 2 out of 3 from the Yankees, which is really hard to do. The Yankees are one of the best offensive teams, you know, in the American League, one of the best teams in the American League, along with Baltimore, who, you know, so, yeah, Oakland's a tough team. I don't know, for now, Oakland's a tough out. They're not a doormat. They're going to punch you in the mouth. They're going to come hard at you, and they're not going to just lay down and just let you step on them. So it's good to see. I wonder how they do. Yeah, definitely.
See the fight in them. And you know what? I remember a couple of years ago as well when you guys had Cedric Mullins, you had John Means, and you guys weren't really going anywhere, right? And I said to myself, wow, these guys need to move, you know? Perfect example. Remember when, what's his face? Third baseman. You guys couldn't pay him.
Manny Machado.
Yeah, exactly. Because that was a little trivia for you, you know, being that you're a diehard Baltimore Orioles fan. I wasn't going to give you his name, but I know he's not missed right now. And they went in the right direction, but I thought that the fact that they were unable to pay him, I thought they would get rid of Means and get rid of Mullins as well. And I could really see them in that Mets uniform. But you guys held on, and you were able to build around those guys. And now you're a force. So if I was the A's, I would keep this guy around, you know, because he's 25 years old and he's a piece, you know, to the puzzle. I'm not saying that, yeah, this is the end all. But you start building around players like that, and then when you look, you say, oh, look at us now. Look at us now. We're going for a run. They're building a new stadium in Las Vegas, and soon these guys have a new fan base and a new place to call home. And you start building around that, and you move forward. In the next couple of years, there'll be a threat. Nobody's talking about them now, but you can see the little stars here and there. And, you know, these guys had a lot of stars. Think about it. They got rid of, who was it? Was it Bassett a couple of years ago?
Bassett. They had Chapman. They had Olsen.
Exactly. You see, it was already happening. But, you know, I would have never got rid of Olsen. I would have never got rid of Charbonnet either, you know? I think these guys were the pieces, you know, but I guess they felt like they weren't ready and they didn't want to spend the money because we know how cheap, you know, ownership is over there. But they dismantled something that was, you know, the start of something going in the right direction. You have to keep your pieces. You have to be able to say, all right, I can see the future with those few pieces I have, and it's always good to build around, you know. I remember the Marlins as well. They had all these amazing pieces and, you know, whatever. They won championships along the way, but they didn't have the pitching at the time. But they had a lot of all-stars. They had Stanton. They had Yelich. They had D. Gordon. And they dismantled
Realmuto.
Realmuto. Oh, my God. Look at that. The names keep coming. And they dismantled All these players that we're talking about.
Jose Fernandez, the pitcher who sadly passed away. He was a superstar.
They all ended up, you know, doing really well after leaving. Stanton has his problems, granted, but he's a postseason threat. You get him to the postseason, he's going to perform. It's almost like he's bored during the regular season. It's weird, but then he knows when he has to perform. It's almost like a player that is going to free agency right after the season. For some reason, all those guys always have a great season and they outperform whatever it is that they were doing prior to that. It's like, you know, they know when to turn it on. And it's weird. It almost bothers me in a way because you feel like, why can't you perform like that every day? But then again, I'm not an everyday baseball player. I don't know what my body would go through, you know, playing 162 games. Speaking of that, we're going to be having a special edition episode about whether or not we think that the season is too long. So you guys should definitely stay tuned and look out for that coming shortly in the next couple of days. But I think that players go out there on a daily basis. You know, they play, but I think they get bored and they don't give us 100% at all times. Can you imagine giving your team 100% at all times and being ready to perform on a super high level every single day after practice, after traveling, after, you know, it's hard. It's hard. I'm not saying it's easy, but you get paid big bucks to do this. This is your life. And I think a lot of players, after they get the money and they get those big contracts, they seem to decline. It's kind of like Francisco Lindor, you know? Every time I looked over, I said, man, that guy is amazing when he was playing for the Indians. And I envied them for having an amazing shortstop like that. And then the Mets got him, and he seems to struggle more than usual. And he's the type of player that can make a difference, but for some reason, he struggled in New York. You know, he gets all that money, and now he struggles. And I think a lot of the reasons why he struggles is because management lets him get away with a lot of things that I don't agree with. For example, why is he batting lefty when he struggles when he does? And it's usually a pop fly or ground out somewhere. Yeah, he has his moments when, you know, he catches it and he puts it over the fence. But for the most part, if you look at the numbers, he struggles from the left side. I think he should just come up and hit from his natural position. Be, you know, there's no need to, if the numbers don't add up, then you shouldn't be doing it. And I think it hurts the team, especially in like pivotal moments, right? So now you're losing the game, you have men on second and third, you have two outs, you know, you would expect this guy to be clutch, but batting from the left side, I don't see it happening. I always front on it. I don't see it. And then they say, oh, you know, give him some time. How much time do you need? You know, you've been doing this for a long time. You practice over the winter. You're taking many at-bats. It's not like, you know, season's over, he goes home and he sits on his couch, you know. It's a constant struggle and a constant, you know, battle to keep yourself hot. You just can't say, oh, it's February, let me start swinging at some balls. No, this is something that you work on during the off season. So I don't accept that excuse when somebody says, oh, okay, yeah, you know what, he's gonna get better at it. Just give him some time as the season goes along. No, this is something that you work on a daily basis. And I think that he shouldn't be swinging from the left side at all. I think he'll be a lot more productive if he stayed on the right side, especially in pivotal moments. But who am I to say that? You know, I'm not managing the team. It's just something that the guys upstairs have to look at and say, you know what, Francisco, you're done on the left side. We pay you. You work for us. If you ever, you know, leave us, then you can have that conversation with those guys on the other side. But while you're here, we want you.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
So, stay on the right side. I don't know. That's just my opinion on Francisco Lindor. You know, you have to, like, you know, when you're looking from the outside in, and you're looking at this team that you love so much, and you're trying to figure out what's wrong with the team, you have to look at the little things, and little things like that make a difference, all right? Let's say, you know, he's a natural righty, so why not bat from the right side? Instead of having a, you know, 1-for-3 day, maybe, you know, you can change that, a 2-for-3 day, or maybe a 3-for-3 day, because you're more comfortable batting from that right side. Another person having trouble right now, Aaron Judge with the Yankees. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, Aaron Judge has definitely been struggling so far this year. He's batting .211 with 6 home runs and only 18 RBIs. I thought the addition of Soto would help him because the pitcher that he's going to face is going to have to decide, do I pitch to Judge, do I pitch to Soto, or do I walk both, or vice versa? And if you decide to pitch to Judge, there's a very good chance he's going to get hold of a ball and he's going to just shoot it out. I don't know why he's struggling. I don't know if it's the pressure of having Judge, having Soto in front of him. I don't know what it is. But for some reason, he's been struggling. But I'm not going to worry about it. It's literally, it's not even a month into the season. And so I'm not going to worry about it. You know, players tend to start out slow. And baseball is a slow cooking sport. you know, in New York, it's still kind of cold. You know, the ball, you know, the weather is not hot. You know, the ball travels better when it's warm and humid out there, especially in New York. They have a short porch. So I know some Yankee fans, you know, they want to hit the panic button. Oh, my goodness. Our guy's not doing well. What happened? You know, they start, you know, yelling, oh, bench him. He's horrible. Why did they give him all that money? No, yeah. Don't do that. Judge is not that type of guy.
But the fan base, the Bulls, and, you know, that hurts a player. You know, you come home, you're struggling, and you strike out, and they want to boo you. They want to let you know that you're underperforming. And I think he's struggling as well because, you know, Soto comes in, and he's just a fix-all, right? He's, like, electric. He's scary. He's that guy that can carry the team on his back. You know, he's that type of player. He has that energy about him. And, you know, Judge was like the guy that everybody looked up to and the guy that, you know, fixed your problems. And now you have Soto coming in and kind of like taking your thunder, you know. So I can see how something like that can affect a player, you know. It's interesting. We'll see if he figures it out. Maybe he won't, you know. But when you're playing under somebody else's shadow, especially a player like Soto, you know, because after the trade, right, they were like, oh, my God, now we have Judge, we have Soto, and if Giancarlo can figure it out, then it's over. And I believe that. I think it's true. It's dangerous. If you have all those guys clicking at the same time, teams going into the Bronx are going to suffer. They're going to get destroyed. Can you imagine those guys hitting bombs left and right? You know, it's crazy. It's crazy. They know what they have on paper, but it just doesn't seem to be translating over to the field.
Yeah, no, they definitely, the Yankees have, I would say, four power hitters. Judge, Stanton, when he's healthy and he shows up, Soto, and everyone forgets Anthony Rizzo. He's a power hitter too, and when all those guys get clicking, like you said, it's going to be hard to stop him, but thank goodness that Judge's slumping at the plate has not hurt them because they've had these other guys who have stepped up. You know, like Labor Torres of the world, the Rizzos, you know, yeah. Stan, believe it or not, he's been having a pretty good year. Here's one of the reasons why they're winning games. He's actually showing up this regular season so far. So Stan is kind of, you know, the two players that we thought would do the opposite of each other are exactly doing the opposite. You know, we thought Judge would do well and Stan would do awful. It's the other way around. Stan's doing well and Judge is kind of mingling around, but
yeah,
I'm not going to worry about it. It's a month. It's still cold. I wouldn't worry about the Yankees. So I think the Yankees are just fine. Judge is great. I love him. I hate the Yankees, but
yeah,
man, he's fun to watch.
He is, and he's classy. You have to understand that Judge is classy. You know, listen, I'm not going to say that I wouldn't mind having Soto on my team, and I would be upset if the Mets didn't try after the season is over. He is a free agent, and having somebody like that in your clubhouse is going to change the dynamic of your team. This is a given. And, all right, I think he really, really likes being a Yankee. He knows what being a Yankee means. He performs. He's not scared to perform. He doesn't skip a beat. He's that type of player that no matter where he lands, he's going to perform. He has that Mookie Betts energy. You know, he's electric. He is. He changes everything. And we have to give it a shot. I think he's finally found a home. And depending on whether the Yankees can afford him is the question for later. But we all know that the Yankees, they're going to try their best to keep him around for the next couple of years. I'm going to say that this guy's looking for the most craziest contract. He's probably going to try to break records. He's up there with Ohtani, and he's the type of player that brings fans to the game. It isn't like, you know, Yankee Stadium isn't sold out on a daily basis. It's not. That's the case, no matter what happens. A team could be down in the slumps, and they're always going to fill up the stadium because Yankee Stadium is, you know, where it's at for some odd reason. I don't know. I personally don't like the stadium. I really don't care about the Yankees. I grew up in the Bronx. There's something about the Yankees, you know, they have this aura about them, and I hate the fans, but they're moving in the right direction. They want to get back to the postseason. They want to compete, and they want to be relevant. And I think with the addition of Juan Soto this year, they're moving in the right direction. Like you said, if everybody starts clicking, oh, man, God bless us all. God bless us all. Let's talk about your man Jackson Holliday. What happened?
Yeah, man, Jackson Holliday, I think he got either he's got scared or I don't know what's going on, or they rushed him, but he's struggling mightily.
Yeah,
with his first time up. He only had one hit in 16 at-bats. That's not good. So they did the right thing. You know, they try to be as patient as you can, but thank goodness early in the season they can play around with him. He's not the reason why they're losing. You know, they're not losing games in spite of his struggles, is what I mean.
No.
So they're fine. I'm okay with it. Send him back down. They did that last year with Grayson Rodriguez, who's a starter in the rotation. And he struggled, and they said, well, you got to go back to the minors. He figured it out, and he came back, and he's been probably their second-best pitcher so far this year. So I have no doubts. I'm not going to worry about it. I do kind of think there was a little rushed. It's easy to say now. At the time, I was like, oh, this is cool. They brought him up. You know, because I know when we talked earlier, we said, oh, I wish they had brought him up at the beginning of the season. But the Orioles knew something that we didn't know. And there's a reason why he's back in the minors. So the Orioles, now that they finally have new ownership, they're run by Mike Elias, the general manager. And so it's finally run by a good front office staff who knows what they're doing. And it's not a bunch of crazy people have no clue what's going on like the previous regime. So I'm very confident. I'm not worried about it. But it's what it is. It's going to happen. You know, you're 19 years old, man. You know, it's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, it's a lot of pressure. Come up. He's surrounded by a lot of stars, too. And first 10 games with Baltimore, he went 2 for 34. Average was 0.059. You know, he struggled. It was pretty bad. And I think that him going back downstairs and being able to play on a daily basis and trying to figure out his mechanics, you know, like players like that that do well in the minors, you know, they're not worried about, they haven't figured out. They know who they are, right? And then they come up to the majors, and there's a lot of different things that change overnight. You know, you go from playing for 100 people in the stands at that to going into a stadium that holds 30,000 people on any given night. And that and the elite pitching, being surrounded by all-stars, and seeing how they perform on a daily basis, you know, that can definitely, you know, get to you mentally. And I think that sending him down to recalibrate is going to be good for him. You know, it's embarrassing. I know it's hard. It's hard. I mean, but like you said, he's a baby. He's a kid, you know. But let's see what happens when he comes back up. Because I'm pretty sure before the season is over, we'll be seeing Mr. Holliday show up again. And it might be different the second time around.
Yeah, so, who knows? It'll be interesting, but I'm not worried about it. Baltimore's just fine.
Yeah, they're
going to win games without him. They'll win games with him. So, like I said, there's no rush to either. And there's also no need to have him up here right away. You got other players. You got Jorge Mateo. You got Gunnar Henderson. You got Ramon Urias at third. So they have a plethora of replacements to hold his place until he gets back. So, but anyway, with that being said, for the first time since 2019, the MLB is bringing back Players Weekend in August. It's basically a three-day weekend where players will be allowed to wear, instead of having their names on the back of the jersey, they can have their nicknames on the back or whatever they want on the back. You know, for example, a nickname, a guy that comes to my mind is Bartolo Colon. Imagine if this was around when he was playing. Oh, man, having the big sexy on the back of his jersey. Oh, that would have been amazing. Fans would have been going crazy. I'm not a fan of it. I think it's silly, but I understand what the baseball is trying to do. They're trying to grow the game. They're trying to gear towards appealing, make it more appealing to the younger fans. You know, baseball is not the number one sport like it used to be back in the day. Football rules American sports. It's just the way it is. So they're trying to get new fans, and you know, they're trying to get towards what kids like. Kids like to be flashy. They like taste. Kids like that self-centered attention. Look, me. And it's kind of like that's what they're kind of doing with this. But I don't know. I'm not a fan of it. I think it's not going to make a difference in my opinion. But hey, it's Major League doing what they got to do. Players like it, I guess. I don't know.
I think it's cool. You know, it doesn't bother me. It's not, like you said, it's not going to change anything dramatically. But, you know, it gives the players a chance to relax and be in an environment where they can have a lot of fun with it, you know? Going back to these problems this year that we've had with these umps, right? The Baltimore Orioles, you guys were playing in Anaheim the other day, and there was a pivotal moment in that game where the batter in the ninth, I believe, gets called out at second when he was blatantly safe. And they replayed it, and it was obvious he was, but the umps for some reason called it the wrong way. There's been a lot of problems with the umps this year. It's crazy to me. It's happening. It's just not Mr. Angel Hernandez. It feels like he's, you know, a cancer, and it's kind of like, you know, rubbing off on the other guys as well. It's weird. It's like it's making me want, you know, AI to take over the game at this point. It's crazy, and I'm old school. And for me to say, yeah, you know what? Let's get rid of these guys altogether and let's just have the AI call it. Because, you know, pivotal moments like this, they bother me because if he's blatantly safe, it can change the game. Anaheim ended up losing the game. And I'm going to say that was part of the reason. All right, they came back late. But you know what? You have 27 outs. When you get robbed of one, especially in a pivotal moment like that, it really, really bothers me.
Yeah, no, definitely. So what it was it was the last game of the series. Baltimore had two outs. The guy got on base, and he attempted a steal, and the umpires called him out. They challenged it, and they stuck with the rule. I would thought that with replay, it would make the umpiring a lot better because now you have a third party looking at it from above back in New Jersey. I thought it would fix the problem, but it seems to have made the problem even worse because it just now with the instant replay, everything takes forever. It's slow, takes forever. And so you don't get the results right away. And you know, as an Orioles fan, I definitely thought it was out. I mean, I thought he was safe by a mile. I don't know what happened, but Baltimore caught a break. Sometimes, I mean, that's the plus about when you're a good team and when you're a team like the Angels, you know, it was kind of on a rebuild. They just lost Otani. Things are not going to necessarily go the way you wanted to, and I think that was the case. So Baltimore lucked away by winning that game. They ended up winning that series. But he definitely was out by a mile. He was definitely safe, no safe. Doubt about it. Yeah. But I don't know what the umpires see. I don't know what the people in New Jersey saw, but they thought that he was out, but it's what it is. But with Baltimore, speaking of Baltimore, they just lost the outfielder Austin Hayes. He got hurt recently. They put him on the 10-day IL with a muscle strain to his left calf. They ended up calling up catcher David Barnolas and designated outfielder Peyton Burdock for assignment. And also they end up calling another one of their top tier prospects, who's outfielder. His name is Heston Kerstad. He's from University of Arkansas. He was drafted a couple years ago. He hasn't played so far. In the time that Kerstad has played, he hasn't really done anything surprising. It's more like DH, more like pinch hitting situations and things like that. But I think Austin Hayes, he was struggling, man. I think this came at the right time. He was batting like 111 in 19 games. And, it just wasn't good. So I don't know if the injury is the reason why he was struggling, and maybe he just didn't tell him that, hey, I had this injury, or it just something just finally came up at the moment. Or he felt this pain, and he was just trying to do his best to hold on as long as he could, and they just couldn't do it anymore.
Yeah, a lot of players, yeah, they play hurt because they don't want to lose their status on the team. And I feel like that kind of hurts the game. The one thing I liked about Matt Scherzer.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply. In app only.
He was very vocal about his injuries, and when he felt he couldn't perform, he would knock himself right out. He would actually tell management, you know what? I can't do it. Find somebody else, but I need to babysit this arm right now. And I like players like that. I've always said that. I always said that if you can't perform to the fullest of your ability, then tap out. You know, if it was meant to be, you'll be back. You know, but injuries like that and always change things for the team, because now you're bringing up somebody that you didn't know had talent. This is how a lot of teams find talent, you know? It's funny because sometimes you have to bring players up that you feel like they weren't ready or you didn't have space for them. And then with these, you know, absences from like major stars, you bring up this young talent, and all of a sudden, you're like, wow, this is what we needed this whole time, you know? And that helps the ball club, and it helps the team upstairs as well, because, you know how much you have to pay a Scherzer compared to, like, a random nobody that nobody really knows about because we're not watching minor league baseball like we should, because that's where all the talent is, you know? I know you like to watch a lot of college football, and you're really in tune with what's going on with these players prior to them coming to the NFL and stuff like that, because you like to watch it. I don't really care for that. And, you know, this year is different for me, you know, because I stick to my team and I stay in that box and I learn about players when they confront my team. I'm not looking outside the box, but this year, you know, with this podcast and all, I've been looking at baseball from a different perspective, and it's changed the way I feel about the game, and for the better, of course. And it's different. It's really different. I feel like I'm more in tune with what's going on in the sport. It's fun. It's fun.
No, it's definitely fun. It forces us to really focus in on what's going on and look for stories that we wouldn't be looking for, because, you know, we just care about who's winning and losing and whether our team is doing well. But now, you know, we want to make this podcast where it's not just about our teams. It's about what's going on in the majors overall, you know, interesting stories or topics that come to mind that we want to talk about on the show. Speaking of news, the Texas Rangers recently signed Johnny Cueto. As you know, Johnny Cueto is a starter. I believe he came up with the Reds, I think. And
I believe so.
Reds. And he pitched for the White Sox, I think, last year. And it was the Giants he pitched for. He had a really good year with the Giants 1 year. And they sent him to a minor league deal. Obviously, the Rangers are still waiting on DeGrom to come back, and Scherzer and Verlander, actually, I think, right? All three are still not pitching.
Verlander is he went back
I'm
to
not
Houston.
Verlander. I meant DeGrom. They're waiting for DeGrom to come back.
They're waiting for DeGrom to
and
come
Scherzer,
back.
And Scherzer, yeah.
And Scherzer.
So that's probably the reason why they signed him. So it'll be interesting. It's a good under the radar signing because they don't have to give him a lot of money. If he does great, great. If he doesn't, they could just release him and, you know, he can move around and go where he got to do. He kind of reminds me of Julio Teheran. You know, he came in with the Orioles this offseason. Then they let him go. Then he went to the Mets. They let him go. And then the Mets let him go and he's all over the place. So,
but at least, you know, he tried and they gave him an opportunity to try. I think Cueto is a good look for Texas, you know? Like, imagine if Cueto works out, and then you get DeGrom back, and then you get Scherzer back. Oh, man, you have a problem. You have a problem. But we'll see what happens. Good luck to Mr. Cueto, and I hope it works out for you. I mean, you have a lot of experience. You have a lot of years under your belt, and he can be an asset to a team. And for low cost. It doesn't hurt to try.
Yeah, so the incentive can go up to $1.6 million, but he's got to meet certain criteria and pitch a certain percentage of the games, I think, and whatever they have in this contract for him to make that much money. So for $1.6 million, you take a flyer, see what happens. I think it's a good under-radar signing. Texas does need pitching. Like I said, it's going to be who knows when DeGrom's going to come back. Who knows when Max Scherzer is going to come back. They lost Montgomery in the offseason, so they have to kind of scramble around and try to get starting, pitching. But anyway, with that being said, one thing we like to do on the show is we like to point out the best pitcher of the week and the best hitter. So who's our gunslinger of the week this week?
The gunslinger of the week, going back to Atlanta, Max Fried, 9 innings, 3 hits, no earned runs, 6 Ks, no walks, beating the Marlins 5-0. The Marlins, yes, but Max Fried is a force. All right, so it shows you that elite pitcher is supposed to dominate teams like the Marlins. All right. Let's say it was another team. He would have went out there and gave you the performance of his life. It doesn't matter what team he's pitching against. He's that guy. He's the guy that's going to stop the bleeding if he needs to. He's the guy that's going to give you 100% when he's on the mound. But when you play a team like the Marlins, you're supposed to go in there and at least take 2 out of 3. It's baseball. I'm not saying that, you know, a team that's struggling like the Marlins can't win a game. But I'm saying that when you're playing teams that are struggling during the season, you're supposed to take advantage. And pitcher of the week, Max Fried, he showed us, you know, that he's that guy. He is. After losing Spencer Strider, you still have Fried there showing you what he's capable of doing. And those numbers are ridiculous to me. You're going through a lot of players in that 9 innings, right? And he's able to perform at that level. 3 hits? Come on, let's be serious. That's insane to me. All right?
Yeah, no, it's definitely is. Only 3 out of 27 hitters, only 3 times those players got on base. You know, it's 27 outs in the game, so it's pretty impressive.
It is.
I wish I had gone to that game instead of the one the next day, but it's what it is. But
it's crazy to say that.
Yeah, it's funny.
You know why? I'm gonna tell you why I say it's crazy. I think it's crazy because a lot of people go to ball games, right? And they feel like if a pitcher goes up there and he's dominating like that, the game is boring. I think it's the complete opposite. I think it's fascinating to me to watch a pitcher go up there inning after inning and perform at that level. It's hard to be able to pull that off. You know, you say, all right, he's pitching against the Miami Marlins. They're trash. He's supposed to do that. No, that's not how it works. You have to be able to manage your way through all those innings and all those batters over and over again. And you have to reinvent yourself every time the lineup turns over. because these guys already saw you a couple of times. Imagine the third time around. It's even harder because you have to reinvent yourself every time you see that batter again, because they're adjusting to what you're throwing. This is why they say that after four innings, a pitcher needs to go and sit down, and they need to bring the bullpen in, because the percentages go up for the batter to succeed against a pitcher after the fourth inning. And I say that's BS, because Max Fried just proved to us that it's possible to go out there and have a really strong outing.
Yeah, no, he had a great outing. You know, everyone says, oh, it's just the Marlins. But guess what? Every one of those players are major league players. They are the top of the best, top of the tier athletes on those teams. And, you know, they're not playing a single-A team. They're not playing a high school team. So to do that against a team like Miami, yes, they're rebuilding, I guess. But, you know, Miami has some decent players. You know, they got Jazz Chisholm Jr. They got Tim Anderson. You know, they got, you know, things like that. So they're not a complete, you know, they're not a hogwash team. But either way, it was a great performance. And I'm not surprised it's Max Fried. He's phenomenal. But yeah, losing Strider was a bummer. But it's what it is. But, hey, you know, it's the game of baseball, you know. So good for him. I'm glad he did well.
He's not skipping a beat. That team isn't skipping a beat. That team is ready. And Play of the week, who do our honors go to?
So this week's slugger of the week would be another NL East rival of the Mets, Philadelphia's shortstop Trey Turner. He was hitting .462 with 10 runs scored and 4 RBIs. That's a pretty impressive week, you know, considering that in that week you probably only played 4 to 5 games in a 7-day span. To do that, he just was smashing the ball everywhere. And yeah, that's another great Philadelphia, man. They always strike gold with all these signings, man. Guys who you think are going to be done. You know, Trey Turner came from the Dodgers. They let him go. So you're thinking, he's probably near the back end of his career. He's not as good. Nope. Philadelphia said, we'll take him. And he's just been shining great for them. So good for him. Good for the Phillies. So it sucks as a Braves fan and a Mets fan to see that happening. But, hey, it's what it is. He's not like a, you know, he's not your power home run hitter. He's a gap to gap type of hitter. He plays small ball. He's gonna find a hole, and he's fast. He can steal, and he plays good defense. So you can't forget that.
Yeah, he's top tier in my eyes. I'm sorry, but he's definitely top tier in my eyes. Top tier. Salute. Now, every week we try to stump Lasha with a trivia question. And this is going to be a good one. I like this question. And let's see if you can pull this off. So how many 3 strikeout games did Tony Gwynn have in his 20-year career? All right. So he played with San Diego from 82 to 2001. They called him Mr. Padre. He was a contact hitter that knew how to manage the ball and put it into play and put it in the gaps. And he had a career batting average of .338, accumulated over 3,000 hits, 135 home runs. You have to understand, this guy wasn't a home run hitter. He just knew where to put the ball in that at bat. He was that guy. He didn't try to swing hard. He just put the ball into play, and he succeeded over and over again. Over 1,100 RBIs in his career, 15-time All-Star, 5 Gold Gloves, 7 times he was the Silver Slugger, right? 8-time National League batting champion. That's crazy, all right? So how many times do you think this guy struck out 3 times in a game over the 20-year span?
In a 20-year span, how many times did he have a 3 strikeout
game?
Mm-hmm. Oof. That's very hard to do. Nowadays, back then it was harder because pitchers didn't throw as hard as they do now. When players, the strikeout rate is a lot higher now than it is then. So back then, In a 20-year span, I'd say maybe 60 times he struck out. He had 3 strikeout games.
Wow, 60 times. You're so off. Let me explain to you how many times. He struck out 3 times in a game over 20 years. One time, bro.
Wow, one time. That's impressive. Jeez. Yeah, I just was thinking because 60, because, you know, such 20 years is a long time. A lot of things happen, and it's possible for that to happen. So I wasn't trying to be funny with the number, but 20 years is a long time. Think about it. If you do 20 years, you do 162 games times 20. That's a lot of games, you know what I mean, to do only one time. He's amazing, man. Rest in peace, man. He was the type of guy, he earned every hit he got. He did not miss a – there was not a ball that didn't pass him. You know what I mean? He saw it, he took it, and he was a big guy, so he had power.
He never really used it.
But he was good at – he was a gap-to-gap guy. And when small ball was what was needed in order to win games back then, he was clutch.
Yeah, he was the guy you wanted on your team. It's crazy. Yeah. I see McNeil in that same light. You know, 2 years ago, he won the batting championship, right? And McNeil's the type of guy that slaps the ball around, you know, kind of like what Tony Gwynn did. He doesn't really hit for power. He doesn't really try to kill the ball during his at-bats. He's the type of player that slaps the ball where he needs to get the runner on base alone, you know? And I love players like that because there's so many different ways to approach an at bat, and those players need to be saluted, you know, because these are the type of players that can get you runs on the board. All right, when he sees the opportunity and it's there, he's like, "All right, where does this ball need to go for me to succeed and for this team to score?" Because that's your job. That's your job. So he's not, "I'm gonna go up there and crush this ball and make this a 3-0 game." No, it's not about that. It's about small ball. And it's funny because this series, I was there for the whole series against the St. Louis Cardinals, and that's exactly what they were doing. They play really well. They use fundamentals. You know how many bloop hits these guys got over the course of 3 days at Citi Field? It was just like, "Oh, you're throwing a 100-mile-per-hour ball? I'm going to slap that ball right into the gap." Big guys. This team has a lot of big guys, right? So you see the outfield pushing back, and they're playing really deep. And these guys are just slapping the ball into the gaps. And it annoyed me because it seemed like the Mets couldn't adjust to it. And this is how you win games. This is the true way, you know, using all the fundamentals and putting runs on the board. St. Louis Cardinals are a weird team, though. Like, they score early, and then for some reason they fade. And I saw a record. They were overproduced in the late innings by, like, I think over 40 runs. So, like, in the late innings, they don't score, you know. So they'll get you nice and early, and then they play, you know, defensively, and they stop you. But they score early, and after that, they just fade out. So you have multiple opportunities late in the game to overcome that deficit. But they're a really good ball club. I like them, you know. People forget about the St. Louis Cardinals. The Cardinals, they play really good ball. I'm impressed, you know. Yeah, we lost 2 out of 3, but I was watching, and I'm like, wow, these guys are doing the little things, and they're doing the little things right. And that's what's important. But we're coming to the end of the show. I hope you enjoyed it. And we'll see you on the next one. In the next couple of days, we'll be having a special episode and talking about whether or not 162 games is too much. Have a good night.